This is the Kinky Cast. This is an adult, sexually explicit podcast. If you are under 18 years old, please stop the podcast now. This is episode 52 of our weekly exploration in the kinky world of BDSM and alternative relationships. Views expressed are not representative of the management of the Kinky Cast. In today's episode, we chat with Lee Harrington, author and activist. Here's your hosts, Woody and the Beast.
Thanks, Max, and welcome to another edition of the Kinky Cast. Sitting across the table are two lovely people, and yes, Beast, that's you too.
We do check your prescription. Good afternoon, Woody. With us today, with red hair, still getting used to the red. She used to be a blonde.
Yeah, it's a shock. I don't know who she is.
I'm still trying to get used to this. We have the lovely Chrissy with us today. And Chrissy is one of our field correspondents in the studio with us today with a interview with
Lee Harrington. Hi, Lee.
Hi, I'm so delighted to get to be on the Kinky Cast today. I have heard great things about you guys, and it's a delight to join you.
We've heard so many wonderful things about you, and I know that you're quite a prolific author, and you're an activist, and you're involved in so many different things, kink-related, spiritually. I don't even know where to start. Would you like to tell us a little bit about yourself?
Well, I'm just delighted to get to join you guys today because you are so full of life and energy and joy, and that's really important to me on my journey. I've been part of the public kink, BDSM, alt-sex population and community since 96, so it's been a couple of days now. And I, along the way, it's been such a delight to get to travel internationally. I've been teaching in the kink community since 98 and moved to being full-time in 2006 or five, depending on how you count, I guess. And it's been really exciting to get to go all over, write books, get to do lectures at everywhere from universities with 350 people in the room to doing small intensives with four people and go on this journey through the variety of sexuality out there.
Incredible. You mentioned earlier that you're in Alaska. In our earlier conversations, you're in Alaska. What are you doing in Alaska?
I made a decision about a year and a half ago. I moved up here, according to the state of Alaska, November in 2013. Because love is the short answer. And it's been exciting. I still travel for work. I do tours, some of them longer. So in February, I'm doing a week in DC for Dark Odyssey Winter Fire, followed up in London for a week to do a class, followed by a three-day intensive on sacred kink and alternative consciousness exploration through kink, followed by doing 5 days in New York at the Rope Tracks Conference, doing a one-day rope bondage immersive experience, and doing a book signing for my new book, More Shibari You Can Use. So some of them are longer tours. Some are ridiculously short tours. Like I did 5 states in 4 days in Alabama, Arkansas, Mississippi, Tennessee, and Louisiana. So there's a range where I leave Alaska, get to go and connect with a variety of populations, and then come back home.
We missed you when you was in Memphis and Tennessee, that thing called reality. But I want to thank you for making Tennessee a stop on your tour.
Yes, absolutely. I know I heard about your trip to London, your upcoming trip to London. That's fabulous. I actually got very excited when I saw it advertised on FetLife, of all places, and wish I could go. Maybe I'll get lucky and a sugar daddy will take me. Otherwise, I'm going to miss that weekend.
Well, you laugh about it, but I've done this intensive. It is a 3-day limited to 20 attendees, 25 maybe, depending on how the venue works out. experience where we go into different ways to reach altered states of consciousness. So from rhythm, which a lot of perverts know as being spanking and flogging and music and dance and writhing on your lover's lap, right? To doing role-playing and the work of what's referred to as the path of the horse in some forms of magical traditions and spiritual traditions, to doing stuff with touch and focusing in with mindfulness to our body and our breathing. And it's 3 days of that, right? Mm-hmm. And when I ran it in San Francisco, we had attendees from Seattle. We had attendees from Anchorage. We had attendees from all over California. We had someone who came over from Ohio. And so I already know that we've got people for the intensive in London that are coming over from Scotland. We've got somebody from New York who's trying to make it happen. And it would be awesome to have somebody from Tennessee rock on up and make some magic happen with us. I will, in my heart, hold a space for you that maybe that sugar daddy or that lottery ticket or that
Mr. Domly Dom.
Miss, you know,
I'm ready.
Or who knows, those magic airplane miles that sometimes manifest in strange and unusual ways.
Exactly. I'm with you, and it looks fantastic. I know I'm a big fan of your Sacred Kink book and just the whole focus that you touch on so many different elements. But I'm curious. I know you've got some books out now about Shibari, and you've mm-hmm. written one that was released a while ago, Shibari You Can Use, and then you have more Shibari You Can Use. And in your books, you talk about not only the beautiful decorative ties and how to do them, but you talk about the passion and about the energy that occurs when you do Shibari work. Now, I'm not a rope person. I've had Shibari mm-hmm. experiences, and they're great, but some people, that's their kink, that's their whole focus. Can you help me understand what it's like to experience that type of a high from the Shibari?
Shibari, for people who aren't familiar with the variety of types of rope bondage out there, is a westernized term that was picked up and made popular in North America and parts of Europe, because oftentimes in Japan it gets referred to as kinbaku. And one is to bind, the other is to tie, with a perspective that kinbaku tends to focus more on connection and trust. Sometimes it's referred to as nuwaza, where it is the rope work that you do on the floor or on the bed that is all about eye gazing and being present with each other, and that it's about being with each other rather than about the ties. Because some people get so obsessed with the technicality of it.
Yes.
And I think that can be such a turnoff for people, right?
Yes.
Where it's like, Like I'm looking at your face being like, yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. You get obsessed with, did I tie this wrist cuff correctly? Did I tie this chest harness correctly? And it's important to think about safety all the time in our sexuality, especially in various BDSM practices and kink practices. Am I being safe? That notion of the high of rope can come in a lot of different forms. It could be that meditative experience of being bound down into a ball tie, your chest tied down to your ankles or your thighs folded up into a ball, and then your breath slowing down, your mind slowing down. The rest of your work and what's happening with childcare and the life at large falls away through that slowing of life, that slowing of breath. On the other side, you have that manic dance of moving from pose to pose, body challenge after body challenge, and your being goes through this workout, and you end up with that runner's high experience where through sometimes pain, sometimes just fast movement, those takedowns from being comfortable to suddenly having your ankle pulled up to the back of your chest, your partner grabbing you, holding you tight, is really different.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it is. Yes. Different energy. Totally. Very powerful.
Yeah. And so that notion of what is the high depends on what kind of rope you're doing. depends on where you and your partner are dancing. That for some people, it's a waltz. For some people, it's a tango. For some people, it's moshing out to a hardcore band
yes.
with the punk music going, right?
Mm-hmm. I'm with you. I understand. That's great. Thank you so much.
Lee, you're a tire and a tie-e. Isn't that correct? You experience this on both sides?
Absolutely. I started out being tied when I first got into kink. But I had had fantasies since I was very young on both sides of being restrained. And my focus was originally on the restraint, on the captivity, having taken power away from me or claiming that power from another person. And so for me, I get different things out of it from different sides. And it's really at this point in my journey about who I'm with. Because some people I've bottomed to, there's one of the people I've played with who, you know, he'll throw a thumb into the back of my mouth, pin me down to the ground, kick me, hurt me, tie my wrists behind my back, and I'm screaming on the ground. And there's someone else that I play with who ties my elbows together behind my back, folds me into a ball, and I go into that nothingness space.
I love it.
And yeah, so it's about with being with different people and who I'm with in that moment.
I'm noticing that you have some awards for being a bondage model. A lot of websites out there. You have quite a bit of experience at this, it seems. But now you've transitioned into being an author also, and you have a whole list of books. And
yeah, go ahead, please.
And they range on a lot of subjects besides, and we'll come back to the rope here in a bit, but your books range the gamut from the philosophical to the skill.
Yes.
Yeah, it's really important for me as I believe all of us are complex human beings, right? That, you know, people can be a parent as well as being a pervert, as well as being accomplished at their job. And for me, I am a spiritual being, a philosophical being, a kinky being, a technically minded being. So, you know, it makes sense to me that my work would range from fiction to nonfiction and to get to express everything across the board. It's been a delight to get to be a published author in the last, you know, over the last 10 years. And I've been really honored that, and actually, I guess I've been doing, you know, magazine work for about 15 years. It's been a real honor to have people want to hear what I'm doing and saying, to get to be a curator of information.
It's fantastic that you're able to express so eloquently your thoughts on so many different subjects. One thing that came to mind while you were speaking just now is that we had a visitor to our show a few months back by the name of Capricorn Witch, and she does the rituals at Self in Atlanta.
Yeah.
And she's just a fantastic individual. We were speaking and she said that, you know, one thing she found very important to her was that she didn't want to be a fragmented person, and she was embracing all of the elements of her being. And that kind of came to mind as you were speaking, because you've certainly embraced every element of your being and you're living it, which is kudos, fantastic.
Thank you. Yeah. And I love that there are people in the kink and BDSM communities who are doing more and more ritual and integration work, because seeing that slowly evolve over the last, you know, 18 plus years in the scene, because when I first came in, it was, you know, it was bright when Beyond the Edge Cafe opened up in Seattle many a day ago, and there was a basement. Like upstairs, people were doing light spankings and eating tasty food, and downstairs was enough room for two people to maybe, you know, two little tiny scenes to happen if they didn't mind possibly getting hit with each other's whips. And it was so technically minded and so in that moment with just the kink, as compared to who are we as spiritual beings? Who are we as integrated beings? Who are we as beings? as compared to who are we in that moment of fucking.
And those
Am I allowed to say fucking on your show?
Yes, you may.
You may.
Awesome.
We have no taboos, and we're 18 plus. I think that we're seeing this as this mainstream drive continues. I think we're seeing people discover that this is more than just the sexual aspects. The sexual melds into the whole being, and the spiritual becomes part of the exploration, and just becomes a vehicle to reach there. And I noticed you were in a book with Raven. What was that book again? The Dark Moon Rising.
Dark Moon Rising, mm-hmm. Probably.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. Yes.
So Raven Caldera, for people who don't know him, is an amazing spirit worker and shaman who's also a hardcore fucked up pervert. I have such a soft spot in my heart for Raven, have known him for many years. And it was an honor that when I was writing the first edition of Shibari You Can Use back in 2005, I was finishing up the book in his attic. Literally, I locked myself in the attic and finished writing the first edition of that book. The one that's just been re-released is full color, much fancier, much better, in my personal opinion.
The photographs are stunning. The photography are stunning.
Yeah, Rigger J did an amazing work with those photographs in the new version. But what would happen is I was in his attic, and each day I came down for food, and Raven said, "So do you have any photographs, a photograph I could use for the cover?" And I was like, "Sure, let me go find something." And the next day I came back down with those images, and he's just like, "Do you have anything I can use for this interior chapter?" And by the end of being there for a week, I had done all of the artwork for all of Dark Moon Rising, been interviewed for the project. Like, it was just
you were a captive. Hilarious. Yeah, that's terrific. Raven's fantastic. Yes,
But the energy in that house at that point must have been pretty incredible.
If you ever have a chance to go to Cauldron Farm, it's in Western Massachusetts. It's a farm, and it's quirky. They have a trebuchet and a working cannon. They have a full walkable labyrinth. I mean, who doesn't need a cannon?
Why am I not surprised?
Yeah, because his wife Bella is fantastic and crazy in the most beautiful of ways. And just the land is amazing, like beautiful farm, great camping spaces. It's, you know, a little bit on the rustic side, but that's okay. And just so many different things happen there, from really powerful rituals to really fun groups of people hanging out and singing around a campfire, that you end up with a really quirky energy. I actually did my first hook suspension at that property, and my first ritual hook suspension. And to this day, when I go back into that part of the woods on their property, I still get chills from that experience back in, I think that was in 2005. I think it was 2005. It might have been 2004. It was just such, my body still gets shivers even thinking about that part of the property.
So for Lee, which came first, the kink or the spiritual exploration?
I remember deciding I was kinky and using that word when I was 7 years old. Because I found a copy of Penthouse Forum.
And I remember.
We remember those, yeah. Uh-huh.
And I found a copy of Penthouse Forum in my dad's collection because I am a multi-generation pervert. Neither of my parents are in the scene right now, but my mother still owns a couple of really rockin' sexy corsets. And comes out to like shopping events once in a while. But I found it in my father's collection. I read it and was really struck by this one story that where there'd been all these other stories about people who were felt guilty about their SM or felt, you know, had this one night stand. And it was a story about a woman who talked about her birthday party and a group of people who were into kinky sex, who were her friends, helping her make something cool happen. And I remember saying, "When I grow up, I want friends who will help me make my dreams come true." And so I've been kinky since I was 7, but I had my first really profound spiritual experience at 5. So it's one of, but I didn't join really spiritual community since I was, until I was 12. So it's one of those tricky things of which came first. Mm-hmm. And they've always been, like, I think all of my life has just been a blended adventure because I'm kind of bad at my filters sometimes, where I end up saying things out loud that other people apparently don't say out loud. And I've been doing that since I was a kid. And so, you know, I would be at the Covenant for Unitarian Universalist Pagans as a teenager. And I would say things like, you know, my boyfriend and I were playing around the other night and blah, blah, blah. And I had this moment where I had a realization about spirit and the rest of the room got uncomfortable.
And everybody gets quiet. Mm-hmm. And, well, and how like, do I follow up with that? Yes.
Yeah.
So this has been a lifelong pursuit for you then. This whole adventure has been a lifelong pursuit, which is amazing. I do envy you that courage.
Yes, indeed. You have been very courageous and outspoken and public. You're very out and known for many different reasons and probably known. How many countries have you visited around the world?
Well, I've visited all over the place, but I've taught in 6 countries outside the U.S. so far.
That's fantastic.
But I think part of the challenge with that, and it's one of those things that I really warn people, for people who don't know, I'm transsexual. I lived the first 25 years of my life as a woman, and I'm now 35, 26 years, something like that is when I began my transition. And when I was 19 years old, 18, we started the video, I was in a porn. And as an act of personal politics, I made a decision as a young woman to have my porn be under my legal name. And looking back on it, I don't think I would have made that choice because I ended up with stalkers. I ended up with family members not wanting to talk to me for extended periods of time. Mm-hmm. And so that political choice as an 18-year-old feminist, sex activist, you know, condom distributor, you know, AIDS activist-y kind of person, that choice forced me to stay public. So, you know, and it's one of the, and you were talking before about my bondage awards. It's from when I was female and when I was actively working in the porn industry. And I've won awards for my books on bondage since then and some classes and whatnot. But it's one of the things that I really encourage people when they go, oh, wow, Lee Harrington is so transparent. And so where I go, that's cool. I'm glad I can inspire. But really look at what's healthy for you in your journey.
So
because once you do that, and once you're on the internet, there's no takes back. There's no take backs.
Right, that's true.
So for this new fit generation, you would urge a little more caution and a little more thought before they jump, because we're seeing a lot of jumping.
Yeah,
I'm sure we all have seen the parade of 18-year-old women putting all of themselves out there.
Yeah,
and as you say, there's no takebacks.
No. Once it's out there, it's out there.
Well, there's a pair of, we refer to them as the kids. They're in their early 20s that we, like my partner and I are friends with up here in Alaska. And when they first join the scene, they put on all of these full nudes and hardcore images with full face shots up on FetLife. And, you know, we talked to them at a local munch and said, you know, it might be worthwhile whether that's a choice you want to do. Because you're going to have careers down the road. And we knew that one of them was in a career where if they moved up in different levels of security, that was going to be a conversation issue.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah, we've had these conversations with folks in our local communities, too. And it's difficult to get that message through.
Yeah.
But
it was funny talking with the kids about a year later. They said, wow, we should have listened to you, but right now we're going back and cleaning up stuff. And they were really glad they'd made the choice back then, hearing it, to, yeah, they put up some stuff on FetLife, but they never put it up on OkCupid, and they didn't put it up on Facebook. And they were able to go back and on their Facebook pictures where she'd been wearing a cute little corset, because they're a heterosexual couple, they were able to say, oh, and wasn't it a fun party? A fun costume event.
Mm-hmm.
And start changing the dialogue a bit. But speaking of awards, you do have two of your books, two of your 2007-2012, the NLA awarded you the Jeff Maines Nonfiction Book Award for your books, Sabari You Can Use, which I think Chris will be talking about here in a minute. But a book that I really think ought to be read by more. Playing Well with Others.
Yes, I have that.
I really think that book needs to be read more often.
And I am honored by that statement because Playing Well with Others was an idea that I had come to me in, like, I want to say 2008, because I'd been in the scene for, you know, I don't know, 12 years at that point. And I'd learned a lot. And I'd been blown away when I was talking to people at gatherings of different sorts, how much information I'd picked up and what I was passing on that, you know, to paraphrase Mark Twain and whatnot, common sense ain't that common.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah.
And so it really blew me away that it was like, wait, we're not talking about these things and there's no resource. We've got SM 101 and whatnot and all these new, you know, versions that are coming out in the past 5 years. But, cause I love SM 101, but it still references, you know, bulletin board systems in the reference guide.
Yeah,
it is a bit dated.
JJ needs to play catch up, but there are two reads that I think everybody, and 101 is definitely a solid book that I think everybody coming into this with any serious intentions need to read. But more importantly, yours is the more updated, Playing Well with Others.
Yeah,
more updated version.
Well, and to me, it's not about how to do kink. What struck me that year was like, we don't have any information about how to go to a party. We don't have information about what to wear when you go to a munch, because I was seeing people show up to Denny's decked out in like latex clothing, not joking.
We have seen it. I've been running munches for the past 2 decades.
Yeah.
And I've seen everything, including efforts to have people kneeling on the floor and being fed from the fingers. Yeah.
And that's awesome. If you're at a Denny's, like if you're in Phoenix, Arizona, and you're at the Denny's that is located in the gayborhood, right? Which is the gay neighborhood in Phoenix, where like half the drag queen population works as servers and you're there on a Sunday evening where all the drag queens are. Awesome. Go for it. Have fun. But
not on Sunday afternoon with the church crowd still filtering in. No.
Because when we talk about safe, sane, and consensual, that includes the consent of all parties.
Exactly.
Active and inactive in the scene.
And yeah. especially the 10-year-old.
Yeah, and mind you, as the 10-year-old who saw those things on occasion and was like, oh my God, when is that going to be me? It's kind of cool to see people out and being themselves. And I don't want to censor. Like, I don't want to censor people going out in their corsets and rocking it out because, you know, Lady Gaga, Katy Perry, we're living in an age where that's just part of the experience. And at the same time, allowing people to grow and learn at a pace that is healthy for them as individuals is different. And I struggle with it sometimes because I have friends of mine who are out and kinky and their kids know about it. They don't hide stuff, but they talk to their kids about it in a way that is how their kids can hear it. You know, they say to their 7-year-old, They say to their 7-year-old, mommy's just better at balancing the checkbook than daddy is and likes taking care of all of the stuff that tells us where to go because she's really good at that. You know, 12-year-old, you know, your dad likes to, you know, occasionally, you know, curl up with mom and have mom tell her what, you know, have mom tell him what to do because he likes to feel taken care of. And at 17 and 18, your mom identifies as a mistress and I am her slave. Right. And this is what it means to us.
Well, I have a soapbox I'm often on is a lack of education for tweens and teens about sexuality in the United States.
Yeah.
It just is. We're doing a horrible job at it. We're got this magic number of 18 where all of a sudden everything is supposed to just magically happen at 18. And
with no prep work.
And no prep work. And nothing's occurred before 18. There's been no formative thoughts or behaviors or anything. All of a sudden it's 18. And we push them in the deep end of the ocean. All of a sudden they have everything available to them after having nothing. And it's a real shortcoming for us as a nation, I think.
There's an amazing resource I cannot plug enough called Scarlet Teen, that is sex resources for teenagers and tweenagers.
They are brave individuals hosting it.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. Well, I wanted to speak a little bit more with you, Lee, if we can, about your book. You've got the Shibari books that you've produced. Shibari You Can Use and More Shibari You Can Use. I'm curious, what prompted you to begin the second book? Was it just demand? Did people write to you and say, we need more, feed us? Or how did that come about?
A couple different things. One is that I wrote the original first edition Shibari You Can Use back in 2005. And it won that award in 2007. But if you looked at it nowadays, it was black and white. It was print on demand. The photos were not laid out as clearly as they could have been. It's been one of the top, you know, resources for people in the rope bondage community since it came out. I'm really honored by that, but I was no longer proud of it.
I understand.
And there's a part of me that's like, I want to live up to my excellence. And so I thought about re-releasing it, and I'd had people since that book came out say, your book is really clear. It's an idiot's guide to rope. Literally, when I talk in book one, in Shibari You Can Use, about how to tie a crotch rope, step one is find a crotch.
I'm available.
That's exactly it. And
you volunteer for everything, Chrissy.
It's a joke, but it says in there, is your partner an innie or an outie? If they have an external genitalia, do they want it squished or do they want it framed?
Good point.
Right? Because a lot of the books out there expect the models to be 110-pound, when soaking wet, little tiny Caucasian or Asian girls.
That's right.
Which is a fine aesthetic. It's a lovely aesthetic.
But it's not reality.
Well, it's a reality for part of the population, but let's have a conversation for the rest of us.
Yes.
And because I don't want to belittle that part of our population who are amazing, who sometimes get put down by people who are of other shapes and sizes. Oh, those people aren't real. Actually, they are real, but they're not the bulk of our population.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I was asked was, can you do that for other ties? And so I decided to do a book, too, that not only showed a large number of additional ties, it shows head cages and some speed bondage. It shows different types of chest harnesses and ways to restrain people in other combination ties. But I also decided to include a chapter on power exchange with rope, how to use rope bondage to connect with your partner in different ways. I have an exercise in each chapter that has, for example, one of the chapters, the exercise is mindfulness. Take a moment with your partner and breathe into the rope and feel their breathing. Let the rest of it go for a moment. Okay, now feel the rope on your fingertips or brushing against your chest if you're the one being bound. Just feel the rope. Take a moment to look your partner in the eyes and actually look them in the eyes. Don't be wondering what the next step is going to be as a bottom. Feel this step. and be present in this moment, because it's hard. We're not taught those skills as we're growing up. And a lot of perverts are still carrying that story of, I have to have the perfect plan. I have to know what the next step is. I have to anticipate, instead of being here and now. And so it was important to me to not only build more 101 skill sets, but to include some 201 stuff that is clearly articulated and visually beautiful and showed models from a variety of backgrounds. We've got a model in there who's over 50 or is around 50. We have a model in there who is super twiggy thin. We have models in there who are ethnically of a Latino background. We have people who are African American. We have somebody who is ethnically from India. And we have people who are trans. We have couples that are straight. We have couples that are gay. We have folks that are lesbian. We have folks that you can't really tell where they are on the gender spectrum. And that's awesome.
And that's okay. Yes. I love the diversity.
Well, not just okay, but it's awesome, because I think that there are books out there that say it's okay to be this. You can modify your ties. We'll somehow put up with you.
Oh, no, no, no.
But that's the subtext that gets said a lot. This book is for heterosexual couples, but if you're dykes, it's okay. Well, what about, and this book is for everyone? And even if all you can do with a piece of rope is pick it up and have your partner smell it and feel the texture on their skin, that's awesome too. So that's why I wrote the book. And because I really wanted to write another book and it seemed like a good idea.
I love it. I have to tell you that you've given me a definite reinforced curiosity. You've reinforced my curiosity towards shibari, towards rope, towards being tied in, towards the whole power exchange, the dynamic that occurs there. I'm looking for riggers. Anybody interested to tie me? It sounds fascinating and fabulous.
I'm looking at your book list, and one just kind of surprised, The Toy Bag Guide to Age Play.
Yeah.
That's a very interesting book. I'm familiar with the Toy Bag Guide series and the Age Play. That was a interesting book in that sequence for sure.
This is a story where there was a person who had put out a call for a nonfiction age play anthology that they were looking for people to tell their stories. And this was, 2005, I think this happened. And 2005, 2006, somewhere in there. And I think it doesn't matter. And I was hanging out with them when I was visiting New York. And what happened was they put out the call, and people from within the BDSM community said that and this was not part of Greenery Press, this was for a different publishing company, said that if this individual wrote a book on age play nonfiction and associated it in any way, because the person was also known as a BDSM person, that it was going to make BDSM look like pedophilia, and they were going to out them at their work where they worked with actual biological children and destroy this person's life.
Oh my God.
And when they told the names to me privately of some of the people who had been giving them threats, active threats, I'm like, that's messed up. That's because it was leaders in the BDSM community. And I happened a week later to be having lunch with over in San Francisco with Janet Hardy, who owns Greenery Press. And she's like, that's fucked up. And yeah. I'm like, yep. She probably didn't say that word because Janet is very elegant but I'm like, yeah. And she said, well, why does that happen? I said, there are no nonfiction books on age play in English. There are none. And as of that, because as of that moment, it was true. And she said, well, clearly we need somebody who's not, you know, not blackmailable. And I'm like, yeah. And she said, who actually does age play? And I'm like, yeah.
Uh-oh.
And she said, so what are you doing next month? God. Because I am
you
a
were a
player.
Sheep to the slaughter for that one.
Right. Well, I am a passionate age player. I love being a daddy. I've loved being a mommy. Both when I was female and when I was male, I still identified as a mommy for one of my partners, even after gender transition. And I've loved being a little boy. I've loved being a very taken care of girl, playing across the age range. And I even have a role playing that my partner and I do, which is what we call being 80-year-olds, where we go to events and we sit on a porch. And we watch the youngsters go by, and we have quiet conversations while reading a book. It's awesome. It's totally awesome.
So Lee, you do truly enjoy the whole spectrum of this huge world that we're in.
There are some things that, because I'm a big believer of try everything once, try it twice if you think the person didn't deliver it well. And that counts for food too. And, there are things that I now have tried where I'm like, you know what? Good for those people who'd really like it. And I'm glad I've tried it, but no, thank you. There are certain activities that I've just decided aren't for me or aren't for me in this part of my life. And that doesn't make those activities bad. And some of those things are things that for some people are everyday activities. And for some people are like, I can't believe you ever tried that. And I'm like, yep. And I don't need to do it right now. Or in some cases, wow, I can't believe I tried that really, that thing that I didn't think I'd like, but now it's part of my everyday experiences. I'm not telling everyone to do that. I do that because I'm the kind of person who does that in all of my life. I know people that what they've tried is spanking, and you know what? They love spanking, and they love doing spanking once a week with one person bent over the lap of the other person with hand spanking with the underwear still on, but pulled down. And it's what they do every week. And they've been doing it for 15, 20 years. And that's stunning because they know that they're happy. Good for them.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Life's too short. Enjoy it. Enjoy.
Yeah.
And Lee, we've enjoyed having you visit with us today. You're wonderful. Your stories are fabulous. Your knowledge base is tremendous. And I think you're just a heck of a nice person, too.
Oh, shucks. It's been such a delight. And I'm so happy we were able to make our schedules work out because y'all are wonderful.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
It's been a pleasure to have you on here. And your new book comes out on the 1st of February. Is that right?
Yes. More Shibari You Can Use, as well as it's the revision, the second edition of Shibari You Can Use in full color, new images, new printing. And if people are interested in more information on that, they can visit my website, which is passionandsoul.com, or you can type in Lee Harrington on the internet, and you're either going to get me or a woman who writes books on dog walking.
Yeah, I saw that other Lee Harrington came up.
Oh, she's awesome. We talk on Facebook all the time.
It's been great talking to you. And are there new projects cooking?
Yeah, actually, I've been working for the last 8 years on a book on power exchange relationships, and I think that's going to be the next one in the queue. And I have a book of erotic and sacred poetry that's going to be coming out in the fall.
Well, be sure to look us up, and we love to host you as those books get closer to the releases.
Oh, thank you so much.
You have been listening to episode 52 of The Kinky Cast. The Kinky Cast is a production of Rooster in the Round. Next week we visit with Midori, Rope Goddess, and General Do-Gooder. On behalf of Woody, the Beast, and all our kinky crew, I'm Max.